from the book The Open Door of Emptiness by James Lowe. Chapter 3. Open to Life, the Heart of Awareness. Part 8. The final concluding part of this chapter. Wisdom and compassion. A lot of our emotions are generated by people rather than things. So, how can we relate to the people who become fixtures of our lives? Situations of familiarity are where we are most likely to develop an interpretive story about the other person, some sense of the patterns and predictabilities of the other person's behaviour, and with that, the arising of irritation if they change their pattern. Truly seeing someone, receiving them as they are, is not the same as knowing about them. Being with someone is an allowing of their existence, as it is now, to be as it is, without judgment. Yet, as we gather information about someone, we build up a map that seems to describe them, and then, when they stray from that, as they inevitably do, we become irritated and may feel betrayed. It was their reliability that was keeping us safe, as if how we had taken them to be was providing us with a secure foundation for our life. In this way, we privilege the map in our head over the other person's current actuality. We are saying, "I know how you should be, and therefore, if you want me to be happy with you, you should be the you that I know you to be, rather than the you that you currently are. I know you better than you know yourself." It is we who have created this essentialized view of the other. But this essence is an abstraction, while the actual person is a flow of co-emergent patterning. We do this in order to try to establish the stability of our identity. The fact is that both you and I emerge as ourselves moment by moment, according to events. Yet this can be ignored if we focus on the images and narratives that we have developed about self and other. If I see you and see myself in terms of my pre-constructed maps and descriptions, then this reliance on abstractions helps me to feel safe and stable and predictable in the face of the actuality of ceaseless change. We gain a sense of continuity, which is reassuring but limiting, for a kind of sclerosis occurs, a sealing over, a rigidity which blinds us to the potential of the non-dual field. However, if we trust the world as it directly reveals itself to us, then, instead of interpreting it according to maps and fantasies and memories, we work with how it is. If we can work with how it is, then the other person will be accepted as they are. It is a good, though perhaps unsettling, experience to be accepted as one is. It's not all that common in life. In the course of our lives, we accumulate a lot of knowledge about people and items. The question is, what does the knowledge pertain to? What function do we employ it for? Resting in our knowledge about someone is a violence to the actuality of their current presentation. We actually cannot know how they are until they disclose this. And this disclosure is relational. It's influenced by how we are in that situation. Some of what we know about the person may be relevant to this new moment, but which aspects? That will be determined by the moment and not by our plan or intention. Knowing about people and knowing them in the sense of being with them are very different. The former mode is cognitive, while the latter is immediate, the receptivity of awareness, which reveals the complicated, unpredictable richness of the situation, and is more authentic than trying to organize on the basis of predictions and maps. Being itself doesn't change because it is open, empty of any defining content of its own. Becoming, which is our experience of being in the world with others moment by moment, is the arising of thoughts, feelings, perceptions, memories, expectations, and so on, in specific transient patterns. Becoming is contextually evolving. So, how could we have accurate information about another person as they actually are in this moment? How could we have accurate understanding, predictive of ourselves? Only by aligning ourselves with the pre-established template and by privileging this over the openness of presence. This view would indicate that a lot of our mental activity is redundant, that we do a lot of planning and sorting things out, which is not actually useful or necessary. Our mind can be empty and contented, and it can be full and contented. The contentedness of the mind is not dependent on the content of the mind. Our mind itself, our awareness, our presence, is intrinsically contented, at peace, satisfied. This is the great completion, Tsogpa Chenpo in Tibetan. All of us have huge creativity. To be alive, especially as a human being, is to be endlessly creative. Our creativity reveals the open potential of the world, of the field of experience. It is our own limitation which fixes things in their place, defining them as this or that, as if the definition related to a truly existing essence. When we meet the world and ourselves through the veil, the screen of our knowledge, what we see is the veil and not the actuality. Our knowledge doesn't improve our sight. In fact, it makes us blind while we think we are seeing better. This is the nature of ignorance, according to the Buddhist view. From this point of view, compassion is linked with not knowing rather than knowledge. Compassion is to open ourselves to receive the other as they are. And this is both their openness and their precise configuration at this moment. Our receptivity is part of the pulsation of co-emergence, and from it, our response arises as a gesture of contact, of connectivity. It is the naked openness of our presence which offers this compassionate or attuned connectivity. We dispense with the protection and cladding that makes us feel safe. Yet we are safe, since open presence is invulnerable. We are more vibrant, more alive, and this invites others into their vibrant aliveness. When we bring our knowledge about another person into the present moment, we might consider how big, how strong, how stable is this moment. Can it support a feather or a ton of assumption? It is normal human practice to bring a lot of ballast into each moment in the hope of stabilizing it and making it understandable. The gravity this brings may be reassuring to us and support our sense of personal agency, yet we are also encumbered and burdened by it and lose touch with the lightness of our open presence. We have to trust that all is well and open to the situation, however it is. You meet a friend for a coffee and the conversation goes wherever it goes, because to-ing and fro-ing in an unpredictable way is what a conversation is. In these moments, you have a good time, a good conversation. You are really there. This is being alive. It's not esoteric or magical or transcendent. It's just, oh, I could have more of that. I could have that all the time. Having trusted this, why do I let it be something rare and special in my life, rather than being the flavour of everyday life? Why is it that I abandon being fresh, alive and connected? What do I think is better than this? What is so frightening about being connected? That's the very central question to look into. Where am I better off than being here now with you? Part of the function of meditation practice is simply sitting with whatever's here. This is all there is. This is it, as it is. Funny sounds arise in the room. People move about. Memories come. Sensations in the body. It's a bit higgledy-piggledy. Shouldn't we have some spring cleaning? A bit of order? No, this is how it is. The disorderly unpredictability of the emergent field. We're still alive. Life is like this. However, this is. There is no designer, no pre-existing plan. Patterns emerge and interact. If we relax, then there is space for contact, free of the conflict that arises from defensiveness. Actually, not knowing is a very friendly space. If we say someone is a knower, it's not really a compliment, for it usually means they're pretty closed. It's difficult to relate to them, because they're always hitting you with the answer. Whereas not knowing is friendly and inviting. Keats is famous for his notion of negative capability, the capacity to not know what is going on, to not have to make sense of things, to allow the unfolding of possibilities. In order to make sense of what is happening, we tend to lose contact with ourselves. We give ourselves over to the domain of concepts. Whereas, if you stay in your senses, you remain part of the immediacy of the situation. The immediacy is the inseparability of primordial purity and spontaneous emergence. The purity of the mind is its intrinsic lack of the fixed content. Whatever content is arising, including the interplay of subject and object, can be accepted as okay, because it's not going to cause any harm. The purity of the openness of awareness is indestructible. It's not an entity among entities. Therefore, we don't have to protect ourselves against the world. Self and world are transient experiences devoid of substantial essence. Thus, naked engagement, trusting, spontaneity, improvisation is the simple way in which we can be vital and alive and connected with other people, open to change in all directions. Wisdom is to recognize the fundamental openness of our situation, in which you can't grasp any fixed content as to who or where you are. When we look back over the years, we've been so many people. We've had so many emotions, moods, and hopes, and fears, all gone. I can't define who I am, but I'm here. This being here-ness is the being here-ness of an openness which is ungraspable, and simultaneously of a potential which can manifest in infinite ways according to the particularities of each situation. This is the non-duality of primordial purity and spontaneous manifestation, or wisdom and compassion. And this is the heart of the practice. The function of meditation is to relax unnecessary effort and thereby allow our controlling tendencies to go free by themselves. Releasing our habit of employing the patterns that we're familiar with, we are free to find ourselves anew in the new situation. Of course, that can feel a bit scary. How will I know what to do? Our anxiety promotes the sense that we need to know what will happen so that we can prepare. Yet actually, we simply have to trust the practice. Open and relax, and the creativity of the ground will flow through us. The mind itself is open. Open means free of foreclosure. No shape, no colour, no form. The mind is not a thing. Yet, how can I be somebody who doesn't have a shape? The mind, my mind, is not the content of the mind, not the patterning of thoughts, feelings, tendencies, etc., which constitute our personality. The mind is our presence, not the transient experiences of our subjectivity. Our body has a shape, but it's a shape that changes. But the mind itself has no shape or colour. You can investigate this for yourself. When a thought arises, it may seem to have a shape, a color, and an intensity. Emotions have an impact, then they're gone. Actually, whatever has shape and form is moving and changing. The only thing that doesn't move or change is our being, and it has no shape. This is weird. Our existence is very, very strange. We are not what we think we are. We are what we are, but because we don't recognize what we are, we create what we think we are. But we're not what we think we are. We are what we are. And this is a given. It is there without any effort on the part of our subjectivity. To find this natural freedom, all we have to do is to stop asking thought to do work it can't do. Thoughts can do many, many things, but thinking cannot give you a stable personal identity, and thinking cannot tell you who other people are. It can help you remember somebody's name, but it can't define the person, because human beings are beyond definition. Whatever you think about yourself, however you define yourself, this is not who or what you actually are. We are. We just are. We are present prior to and throughout all the myriad experiences which occur. Whatever comes, comes. Whatever goes, goes. In this meditation tradition, the basic principle is whatever comes, comes, whatever goes, goes. While you are sitting, the key point is not to interfere with the flow of experience, not to try to improve it or make it fit your template. All kinds of thoughts and feelings arise, yet we're not clinging onto any of them, nor are we trying to push them away. Simply be the openness, which is the mind itself, and allow the energy of the mind to manifest freely, however it is. Sometimes the mind feels very sad and depressed. If that happens, it may seem like a heavy mood that's pervading you, like morning mist that fills the valley. Everything is opaque, and you've no idea what's going on. Don't worry. Don't try to do anything. Just sit with the one who knows nothing. I'm lost and confused. I feel hopeless. Okay, that's a feeling. That's a mood. Who is the one who is experiencing this? The storyteller is here, yet so is the immediacy of the presence, which is revealing the movement which is the storyteller. Without changing the story, simply be present with the unfolding of the story, however it comes. However, this infinite hospitality will not be available if you have a predetermined notion of how your meditation should be. Whatever comes, let it come, even if it's harsh, judgmental, toxic, dreary. Meditation is not about getting a better kind of thought. It's about seeing, really seeing, that thoughts are empty and leave no trace. You only need to try to grasp a good thought and see if you can keep it. What's the point of working very, very hard to get good thoughts in your mind if the buggers keep vanishing? When you look in your mind, thoughts are always vanishing. Even if they're very lovely thoughts, they're always going to be going. Don't worry about the content of the thought. In fact, when you get self-hating thoughts, when you get hopeless thoughts, crazy thoughts, destructive, cruel thoughts, or any kind of thought, feeling, sensation in the mind, don't fall into seeing it as being inherently meaningful, as something telling you the truth about your situation. Just observe, without involvement. Whatever comes, comes. Whatever goes, goes. Let it come and go, and be the unchanging presence. In this way, we're not like a nightclub with a bouncer on the door. We're not trying to keep the bad guys out. We're living in a house which has no front wall and no back wall. And so the good guys come in and they go out. And the bad guys come in and they go out. There are only side walls on the house. And then they start to fall down. And everything's space. So, coming and going, coming and going, that's the heart of the practice. In the Tibetan tradition, the mind of the Buddha is said to be like the sky. It's like space. It's infinite. Storms arise in the sky, thunder and lightning. Then the next day it clears. There are no scratches in the sky. Just beautiful sunshine and rainbows. It looks gorgeous. Then it changes and clouds come again. Then the clouds go. This is the sky. The sky shows many, many different forms, yet the sky is still the sky. We say, I don't like the clouds. We say, I don't want to have a mind like this. We say, this is no good. This isn't the real meditation. This can't be it, because I know what it should be like. With this attitude, our narrow prejudice is already filling the space of possibility. I imagine I'm not alone in the fact that when I was a teenager, I often told lies about myself, pretending I was more sorted than I was, for it felt too confusing and shameful to say, I have to admit, that I don't know how to do this. And I don't know what that is. This was a terrible state to be in, full of anxiety. Moreover, in pretending, you miss direct contact with others and miss out on their normalizing reassurance. It often takes us a while to start to offer ourselves, warts and all, this is how I am. Meditation takes this truthfulness to a deeper, more open level, revealing the richness of our potential as we start to see that all the possible forms of samsara and nirvana are nothing other than our own mind at play. The infinity of my mind opens me to the infinity of other people's minds, so that, however other people are, I can find space for them in my mind, in my heart, with compassion, because I'm not entering into judgment about what is occurring, simply seeing it as it is and working directly with that. With meditation, we relax judgment, relax the will to power, the need to control. We allow the mind to be as it is and remain open as we enter into daily life. This is how it is, and this is what we start from. Not how I would like it to be, or how I think it should be. Our starting point is always this moment, this event, not ideas about it or plans for it. With this approach, we can truly see that the thoughts that constitute me are a potential for communication rather than a definition of who I am. This releases us from the fear that if other people knew what I thought or how I felt, they wouldn't like me. The maps we have developed are allowed to be part of the territory, and non-duality is pervasive. From the point of view of Dzogchen, meditation and ordinary life are not two separate domains. It's not that you go on a meditation retreat and create some particular structure of clarity and then bring that back into life where, due to the friction of events, the clarity gradually fades like a melting ice cube. Rather, sitting and moving are interpenetrating as we open to being with how things are. This is the willingness of the Buddha to enter every situation. Teachings given at Bright Elm Centre, Brighton, UK, December 2012. Revised by James Lowe. From the book The Open Door of Emptiness, a collection of public talks and teachings by James Lowe. Read by Wendy, March 2026.